Okay, good morning, everybody. Today's daf is B'Masiyah Daf Kuf Tes Zayin. We are holding on the top of Daf Kuf Tes Zayin Amaral. We are at Tanya Kavase de Rav Yehuda, five lines into the page already on Kuf Tes Zayin Amaral. Today's shir is sponsored by Dr. David Lander, in honor of his wife and children, and Lili Nishmas, his mother, Goldava Simcha, Aleha Shalom. We wish Dr. Lander also a Mazel Tov on his being a finalist in the Chidon Tanakh, National Chidon Tanakh. He should continue to accomplish all of his learning goals and see Hatzlacha in everything. It's also sponsored by Daniel Sadian for the success of Klal Yisrael in these times, and Hatzlacha for our soldiers and for our captives. They should return home safely. It is also sponsored by Avi Eisenberg, Lezech Nishmas, his father, Mr. Jacques Eisenberg, Yaakov Ben Avram Abba, Zechron Levrach, whose yahrzeit is today. And it's also sponsored by Zev Belsky, Lezech Nishmas, an old friend, Rabbi Avi Oberlander, Zechron Levrach, who was the assistant Menahel in the Waterbury Yeshiva, his Neshama Shav and Aliyah. We thank all of the sponsors very, very much for the sponsorship. So what we're going to discuss today is the following. The Gemara is going to bring a brisa to support the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda that we learned yesterday. That's why the first words we're learning are Tanya Kavase Rabbi Yehuda, because we're going to bring a brisa that supports the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda that we learned yesterday, that one does not get Malkus on the general Isser of Nefesh Chovel, that even though there are specific Isurim in the Torah about what you're not allowed to take as a Mashkon, but the broader Isser, the Lav Shebechlal, so to speak, one does not get Malkus on. Then the Gemara is going to have a machlokas whether a person can be believed about a mashkon that he was not supposed to take, that he should be believed that he's owed up until the value of the mashkon in terms of the loan that he's owed. Meaning, you owe me money, so I go and I grab an ochel nefesh mashkon. I'm not allowed to take an ochel nefesh mashkon, but I took it anyway. So am I going to be believed at least, but I have it right now in my possession. So am I going to be believed with amigo that I could have said this was mine because it's in my possession right now? So at least believe me that up until the value of the mashkon that I should be believed that I'm owed that amount of money, and that will bring us to the end of Perek HaMekabel, and then we'll begin the 10th and final Perek of Maseches B'Metziah, and the 10th Perek is going to start with the Mishnah that talks about if a two-story building where one person owns the bottom floor and someone else owns the top floor, if it caves in, who's entitled to the raw materials, the stones and the materials, the building materials, because that was the real value. They didn't just sweep it away and dump it somewhere. That was the real value of the fallen building. The Gemara is going to talk about how our Mishnah is talking about a case of Bari Vishema, where one person has the Tainas Bari and the other has the Tainas Shema. We'll see if we get to the second Mishnah on Amud Beis, but the second Mishnah is going to talk about if only the top floor broke, what is the bottom person actually responsible for? So we'll see, Bez Hashem, if we get there today or not. Probably not. So let's begin with Tanya Kavase de Rav Yehuda. So again, five lines into the page on Kuf Tes Zayin Amud Aleph. So the Gemara wants to bring a raya to the sheet of Rav Yehuda that we learned yesterday, that about the Isser of taking as a mashkon a rechayim varechet, that you're not allowed to take a millstone as a mashkon. So Tani Kavasei Rabbi Yehuda, we have a brisa that supports the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda that if you do take a rechayim varechev, you don't get a separate malchus for the pasuk of ki nefesh uchovel. And the raya is from two brisas, and by when you put the two brisas together, we then have a single strong raya. It's not explicit in one brisa, but based on the factors that we determined from the combination of these two brisas, we're going to see that Rav Yehuda is correct, that one does not get Malkus separately for Ki Nefesh Uchavel. One Braisa tells us as follows, Chavel Zug Shel Saparim, if a person in the Malva takes as a Mashkon a pair of scissors, which was made out of two separate blades that you would stick together, and then you would use them together, but they're really effectively two separate Kalim, that just when they latch on to each other, they can be used in conjunction with each other in order to be used as a scissor. Vitzemet Shel Paros, or if a person person takes two cows that plow together in a field under the same yoke, but clearly they are two separate cows. It's just that they're normally connected with a single yoke to do the plowing in the field. Now, these types of kelim are ochel nefesh kelim. You're not allowed to take such kelim as a mashkon. So chayiv shtayim, a person chayiv two malkios, because with each part of the, with each blade of the scissor and with each one of the cows, he violates the losasei of ki nefesh chovel, even though he's using it for one single malacha. But zebi atzmo, if he takes one portion of the, one blade of the scissor, or only one of the cows, einu chayiv elachas, and he's only going to be chayiv one malchus. So you see from this brisa that on two separate, on the two parts of the scissors or the two cows, you get two malchios, but it's still not a perfect riot Rav Yehuda, because by these kelim, even Rav Huna might be moda that you only get two malchios, because the iser is only mishum ochel nefesh, that you took an ochel nefesh type of item. But it could be that when it comes to a rechayim v'rechev, which the Torah specifically identifies as something you're not allowed to take, it could be that if you take those things, you're lo keshalosh, because there's another mefurish Isser in the Torah. So this brisa on its own is not a perfect riot, Rabbi Yehuda. So Gemara says, yeah, but when taken in conjunction with the other brisa, Vitanya Yidach, we're going to see that Ataka is a riot, Rabbi Yehuda, because we have another brisa that says, Chaval Zug Shel Saparim, if again, a person takes as a mashkon, a malva takes as a mashkon, a pair of blades that are meant to be used together as a scissor, Vitzemet Shel Paros, and he takes two cows that are used together to plow a field together, Yachal Lo Yechai. You might think that one is only chayiv one malchus. Tam lomar lo yachbol rechayim v'rechev. That's why the pasuk says you're not allowed to take a rechayim v'rechev. Now, rechayim v'rechev are millstones. They have nothing to do with scissors. They have nothing to do with cows. So it says Brisa, yes, they do. Ma rechayim v'rechev shein miyuchadin shnei kelim. Just like rechayim v'rechev, they are two separate kelim that work in the but yet v'osim malacha achas. They work in conjunction with each other to do a single malacha, namely the grinding of the grain in order to make flour. You have the upper stone, the lower stone, and together they rub against each other and the grain goes in between them and you make flour out of it. And nevertheless, you're chayiv for each one separately. You're chayiv for the rechayim separately and the rechav separately. So too, whenever you have two separate kelim that work in conjunction with each other to do a single malacha, you're chayiv on each one separately. So you see from this brisa that someone who takes as a mashkon rechayim v'rechev gets two malkios, like Rabbi Yehuda. And you don't get that third malkios for kinefesh u'chovel. And you cannot say that by rechayim v'rechev you really get three malkios. You also get a malkios for kinefesh u'chovel. And the Bryce is just telling me about that we learn from rechayim v'rechev that there's a malkios on each one of the kelim individually, because this Bryce very explicitly compares rechayim v'rechev to zug shel saparim. And the first Bryce said, by a zug shel saparim and by a tzemet shel paros, you only get two malkios, not three. So if we're going to say that zug shel saparim, or the shtei paros are exactly like rechayim v'rechev, and we had a beferish of brisa that in those cases you only get two malkios, there's no way to interpret this brisa as saying that by rechayim v'rechev you actually get three malkios. It must be that you only get two. So, but you also don't have a raya from the first brisa alone, like Rav Yehuda, because one could have distinguished between a rechayim v'rechev and a zug shel saparim. This brisa tells us no such distinction should be made, that we learn from one to the other that they are fully equated with each other. So when you put the two brises together, that's when we have a raya. It's Rav Yehuda that there is no separate malkios for the pasuk of ki nefesh u'chovel. And now once we're on the topic, says the Gemara, there was a maisa who gavra the chavel sakino. There was a guy that took as a mashkon a knife that they used to cut meat in the butcher shop, a meat cleaver in the butcher shop. That's how Rashi understands what this is referring to. Tosfos Rashi writes that it's not mistaver to say that, because the hemshech of the sugya tells us that we're talking about a type of knife that people are very makbid not to lend out to anyone, because they're afraid that there's going to be a pegima in the knife, that if people start using it too much, there may be a little chip chip in the blade of the knife, and that's and people are very makpid about that. So it says Tosfos Rosh, since when are butchers so makpid if a meat cleaver has a little chip in it, a little something? So therefore Tosfos Rosh says, no, we're not talking about a butcher, we're talking about a shochet. A shochet is super makpid, that because the shechita knife, it will trape up all the shechitas if there's a pekima in the shechita knife. Right? It's the first thing a shochet does when before he starts shefting, he checks the knife, he rubs it along his skin, along his finger or his palm or whatever, to check, to make sure, to feel for any tiny pegima. A Rav walks into a shachtos, and the first thing the shochtim do is they show their knives to the rabbi. It's really to test the rabbi to see if he knows what he's doing, if he knows how to check a knife. But they, to see if there's any pegima in the knife. They're super makbid about it. The Nuka Yosef quotes a girsa of sakina da ashkafta, which means a leather worker's knife. That he uses it for his parnasa, so it's a kli that he makes ochel that's considered ochel nefesh, even though he doesn't deal with food. But since he's a shoemaker, and that's the knife that he uses to cut the leather to make the shoes, so that's considered ochel nefesh because that's his bread and butter. It's how he makes his living. But anyway, so some type of knife, right? So again, what are we writing? We just started the story. So gavra de chavel sakino de ishkafta mechavre. So a guy took as a mashkon an ochel nefesh knife, meaning a knife that someone uses for their food. So you're not allowed to take such a thing as a mashkon. Also, they came to Abayi, the Malva came to Abayi, Amalei, Zila Hadre, and Abayi says, you better give that knife back to him. That's a kli that they use Ochel Nefesh with. You're not allowed to take that as a mashkon. You want to get paid back? So here's what you do. You go to a Din Torah, you're Tovea, the guy that he owes you money, and there are several things that could happen. He might be Moda that he owes you money, in which case the Bezim will make him pay. You might be able to produce Aidim that he owes you money, in which case the Bezim is going to force him to pay. Or he might deny that he owes you money, and you're not going to have any Aidim, and then he'll have to take a Shavuos Hasis that a Kofar HaKol has to take. That's always the din. Someone who's Kofar HaKol takes a Shavuos Hasis. So the way to force his hand is not by taking a mashkon that's Ochel Nefesh. You're not allowed to do that. The way to force his hand is bring it to a Bezim and figure it and come with your tainas and see what happens. So that was Abaye. Abaye says, this mashkon does not give you any leverage whatsoever. The fact that you grab this mashkon, it's an ochel nefesh mashkon, now let it take it. Rava Amar, lo tzarech lemekam bedina ala, that the mashkon does give you leverage. You don't need to go be toveya him in a din Torah in order to get your money back, because you're holding on to his meat cleaver, his sheichit knives, and the yachaliton, and therefore you can always taina that it's your knife, and you'd be neman to say that, even though now you're being moda that it's not your knife, and that you just owe the money, ad kidei demeya, and you'd be neman at least up until the amount of the value of the knife to say that the guy owes you with amigo that you could have claimed that the knife was yours. So if let's say you're claiming that the guy owes you $150 and the knife is worth $100, so enochinami, it's not going to help you retrieve all your $150. But up to $100 you should be able to retrieve from him, because you could say, believe me that the guy owes me $100 because I could have just said this knife was mine. It's in my house. Why would anyone think it's not mine? So since I could have claimed it was mine, migo that I could have said that, you should believe me, ad kedei demehen. So machlokas Abaye and Rava, that Abaye says having taken an ochel nefesh mashkon gives the person zero leverage, and Rava says it absolutely gives him leverage, ad kedei demehen, up until the value of the mashkon that he took. So ask the Gemara of Abaye, and Abaye says that you have to go to a din Torah and it doesn't give you any leverage. Lesleya, he svara, he doesn't hold of Rava's svara, what happened to Rava's migo? It makes a lot of sense, that migo that he could have said it was his. So my after all, why does Abaye, why would this be any different than another case where Abaye does seem to hold of such a migo? There was another maisa that happened in the city of Narda where goats that belonged to one person ate the peeled barley that belonged to somebody else. And apparently peeled barley is somewhat expensive. So the owner of that peeled barley that really wanted it, that wanted to get paid for it, went and he took the goats and he just brought the goats into his own rishos, the katayin tuva, and he had a taina of a significant amount of money, for his barley that was eaten. So va'amar avud shmuel, so avud shmuel paskind that yachaliton ad kedei demayan, that the bala saorim can taina from the bala izim up until the value of the goats themselves. Migo, that he could have said that these goats are mine, and that that they never belong to you. These are mine, or I bought them, whatever. They're my property. So Migo, that I could have said they're mine. Believe me that they're not mine, but you owe me the money up until the that's up until the value of these goats. The Rabbi Yonah raises the question in Sanctum of Basra that this is what we call a Migo Lahotzi, that Migo to extract money from somebody else. Normally, that's not the way Migo works. Migo is to pater yourself. Believe me that I don't owe you the money because I could have said X, Y, or Z. But this is a Migo Lahotzi Mamum. Generally, Migo Lahotzi does not work. And it's also Migo Mimamum Lamamum, that the two Tainos are not Nogaya to the same money. The Taino of Lukuchim works Lagabe the goats, whereas the true Taino that they ate the barley works to be Motzi Mamun Mamish from the Mazik. So Ben Yonah says, normally that doesn't work either. Migo Mimamum Lamamum doesn't work. It's got to be about the same Mamun. So he suggests that since he grabbed the goats themselves, he was tofes the goats themselves as a mashkon, it's as if he's muchsik in the mammon, and that's a migo lahachsik, meaning it's not migo lahotzi, because he has the value that he wants, so he's muchsik in the mammon himself, and since he was tofes them as a mashkon, it's as if his taina is on the goats, because this is what's going to, the mashkon is meant to pay off the chov, the mashkon is meant to replace the chov, so it's not mammon lahmammon, it's not a migo lahotzi, but bottom line is, the Gemara is asking, doesn't Abaye agree that that's the story that happened with Avuah de Shmuel, that this is a valid taina to say such a migo, that I took something and because I seized it, it is now in my possession, and therefore I could say migo that I could have said it's mine. I could say that you owe me the money up until the value of that item. Since the Gemara, no, the two cases are different. Hasam, by the case of the goats, lav midi davza l'shri l'gurihu. It's not something that typically people lend out or rent out. People don't normally lend their goats to other people. So at the time that the goats, so long as the Bal HaSa'orim is holding on to the goats, he can takataina that it's his, because otherwise how would they ever have gotten into his Rishus? There's no way that they would have been loaned to him, because it's not the type of thing that people lend to each other. But hacha, when it comes to the knife that the Malta took as a mashkon, it's something that people lend and rent all the time. And since people know about this knife, that it used to belong to the Lova, the Malta is not going to be believed that he bought it, because everyone's just going to assume he borrowed it and it still belongs to the Lova. Because Rafuna sent the following psak halacha, that if a person has something in his possession that we know previously belonged to somebody else, it depends what type of thing it is. If it's the kind of thing that people lend out all the time, people rent out all the time, so he's not going to be believed to claim that it belongs to him. So over here also, this knife is something that's asuyin lahashu lahaskir, and that's why Abaye said it gives you zero leverage. You have no nemonos to say that it belongs to you. Now we said that when it comes to the goats, the chazaka is a good chazaka, because it's not davar asui lahashu lahaskir. The Gemara Basra Daf Lamed Vav says hagodro seinem chazaka, that bali chayim that can go walk around on their own from one place to another, a machzik is not able to prove from the fact that they're in his property that they belong to him, because it could be they just walked right into his property. So how does that stim with what we're saying right now? We're saying right now, oh, people lend goats all the time, and therefore when you're muchzik in it, it's a real chazaka. Godro seinem chazaka. There is no chazaka on goats. So the Rishonim point out that in Nahardah, apparently the goats were never left alone and they didn't wander from one place to the other. It must have been a metzias in Nahardah that they're much more protective of their goats. So the whole svar of Godros doesn't apply by Nahardah, where as opposed to other places where goats wander wherever they want to wander. Okay, so now the Gemara says, what's Rava going to respond to this? Ravu said that the Malva is Neman once he grabbed that mashkon that he was not supposed to grab, that it does give him leverage because he has that migo. Lesle hai svara, does he not hold of this svara that something that's asuyin lahashu lahaskir should not give you any leverage, that when it's something that people lend and rent all the time, it shouldn't give you any extra leverage? Varava apik zugud sarbala. One time a similar maisa came where Rava confiscated a pair of scissors that they used to cut wool clothing, the safra dagadita, and a Sefer of Agadah, Miyasmi, from Yisomim, that found this stuff among the Yerusha that they got from their father, and they were muksuk in it, but we knew that it previously belonged to somebody else. So Rava said, the Yisomim don't get to keep it. Why not? Because Dvar Masi and the Hashal Askir, because these are things that people lend out all the time, and therefore we have to assume that the father who had died had borrowed these items. And even though we would normally if the father would have been believed to say a taina that he was kona them, so we wouldn't be motzi from Yisomim. The fact that we are motzi from Yisomim tells us that had the father been alive, he would not be believed to say that he was kona them. Why? Because it's Dvar Masu Nahashu Laskir. So apparently even Rabba holds of this svara, that with Dvar Masu Nahashu Laskir, the fact that you muchzuk in it tells us absolutely nothing. So says Gemara, Amalach Rava, Hainami, he says, you know what, this case of the knife is kiven de mipagma, kapti inchi v'lamushli, meaning Abai is wrong in the Metzias, that he said that in the case of the knife, it's Dvar Masu Nahashu Laskir, it's not. We're talking about a knife where people would be very reticent, very hesitant to want to lend it to anybody, because a single pagima will ruin the whole thing. That was the basis of the Tosa Rush that we said before, that it can't possibly be a meat cleaver used in a butcher shop. They're not so makbid on a little pagima and a meat cleaver used in a butcher shop. Obviously, we must be talking about an actual shechita knife over here, and that's why it's the kind of thing that people are going to be very sensitive about a pagima in the shechita knife. So, Adron Lacham Makabel, now we begin the 10th and final parak of Masechet Bava Metzia. This parak is a fantastic introduction to Masechet Bava Basra. It almost belongs in Masechet Bava Basra. This parak is all about shutfim, which is the first parak of Bava Basra is all about shutfim. We talk about shutfim a lot in Bava Basra. So why does it appear in this parak? Because we also talk about the dinim of a sachir in this parak, but most of the parak is really nogeya Bava Basra. You have like that a lot of times. At the end of one masechta, it already starts bridging you into the following masechta. So in this parak, we're going to discuss what happens when you have a bais aliyah that falls down, meaning an upper apartment and a lower apartment that are owned by two separate people, or if one of them falls down. We're also going to talk about if you have something that goes from the rishus of a bailim and it lands in rishus harabim, or lands in someone else's rishus and it damaged because it landed, my tree tipped over or blew over and damaged your car across the street or something like that. So when are the bailim chayiv in the nezek? When are they not chayiv in the nezek? We're going to talk about a balabais who hires workers. Can he pay them whichever way he wants, or does he have to pay them specifically based on the agreed upon arrangement? We're going to talk about when a person is allowed to use, in what situations people are allowed to use, for what purposes people are allowed to use the Rosh Hasharabim, even though it might be damaging to other parties that want to use the Rosh Hasharabim. And we're going to talk about things that grow in a joint property, jointly owned property, the place where the roots are belong to one person and the place where the branches are belong to the other person, who owns the peiros that are growing on those branches. So those are the basic topics we're going to cover in this parak. So says the Mishnah, Habayis v'aliyah shel shnayim. If you have a bayis and an aliyah, bayis means ground floor, aliyah means second floor, they belong to two separate people. Shenaflu, and the whole building caved in. So there are eitzim, there are avanim that are all mixed with each other, the eitzim and the avanim of the bayis with the eitzim and the avanim of the aliyah. So you don't know, it's very hard to tell whose eitzim and avanim are whose. So shneim cholkin be'etzim avanim v'afar. So both the bala bayis and the bala aliyah divided based on your cheshbon out. How tall was the bayis? How tall was the aliyah? Right? If the bayis was had cathedral ceilings and the aliyah had a very short ceiling, so obviously there are many more eitzim v'avanim that belong to the bayis that belong to the aliyah. But your cheshbon out based on the proportion of one to the other, how much belongs to each guy. Now, if some of those avanim are shalem, they're still intact, and some are broken, and each one wants to taina, oh, the ones that are still intact, those are mine. Yours are the ones that broke. So who do we believe? Is it more likely that the avanim from the top floor broke, or more likely that the avanim from the bottom floor broke? So v'roin elu avanim asu yislishtaber. We have to see which ones are more likely to have broken. It probably depends why the bias fell, meaning houses don't just fall, right? So why did the house fall? If it fell from under it, there was an earthquake, so something started shaking in the foundations, so then it's very likely that the Avnei Abayis are the broken ones, and the Avanim HaShlemos are the ones that belong to the Baal Aliyah. But if it fell over, it tipped over, so the bottom stones fell very close to the ground, and they probably didn't have much impact, and therefore they didn't crack, whereas the stones that came from a much higher place, right, they likely fell further away, and there was a greater impact, and therefore the broken ones probably belong to the Baal Aliyah. So one of them says, oh, I see that stone is mine. That's where we marked off our kids' heights, you know, with each birthday or whatever. I mean, we see our markings on it. We could see that's our stone. So not done. So you take the stones that you recognize to definitely be yours, but then obviously that goes into the cheshbon. Meaning, if let's say we were supposed to split it 50-50, I don't take the stones that I recognize as mine and then split the rest 50-50, those stones go into the cheshbon of the 50-50 split that we're going to have, very logically, with the bias, the aliyah. So says the Gemara, midiktani rowin, from the fact that the Mishnah says that we start assessing which stones were likely to have broken and which ones were not likely to have broken, mochal dika lemeka malayu, it sounds like it's something that we're able to tell. And to clarify, if it sort of just crumbled from underneath it, where the upper ones just fell on the bottom ones, or if it fell like something that would, you know, from impact by tipping over on its side, where the impact to the ground is what likely broke the top stones, where the bottom stones are much closer to the original location. Now, if that's the case, that we're able to be mevarer based on the way that it fell, whose stones are whose? Resha my cholkin. Why would we say in the resha split the stones? Just do a division of it. Nechsi ibechavata nafel. We should take a look and see that if it fell bechavata aliyasa itbar. If it fell by tipping over, then the people who owned the top story, their stones broke. The ibechavata nafel, and it fell by crumbling from underneath it. Tatiyasa itbar. So then the guy who owned the bayis, his stones broke, and the Baal Aliyah should take the good whole stones, and the Baal Abayis should take the broken stones. So it says, "Where lot tzricha d'nafal b'leila." The case of the Mishnah must be where it fell at night, and no one saw how it fell. And since we didn't see how it fell, so we just have to split everything. V'lachzinu b'tzafra. So why don't we look in the morning to see how the stones are? Meaning, it would look different if the wall tipped over, if the wall crumbled from under it. Just, is it a pile of rubble, or is it like scattered all around? So you should be able to tell in the morning. Dipaninu. We're talking about that they've already cleaned up the scene, and they just, you know, they just put it together neatly somewhere else in the dumpster somewhere. So there's no way of telling based on what it is, you know, because someone messed with the crime scene, so to speak. Someone already moved everything around. So v'lichsi man paninu v'lishayli. Find the guy who cleaned up and ask him how he found it. And you should be able to discover it that way. Some random stranger was just walking by and did it, and we have no idea. Security footage. He was wearing a mask. I don't know. And you can't see who it was. You have no clue. So we can't find the guy. So why don't we look at whose rishus the avanim are in, and that person should have a chazaka. And therefore, the guy who wants to take it away from him should be a motzi mechavero, and it's a love araya. So let's see the yasman b'chatz. No, we're talking about where the stones were in a chatzar that belongs to both of them. So neither of them is more muchzuk than the other one in the stones. Inam, you're another possible answer. Bereshis Rabim, that the stones are in Bereshis Rabim. So neither of them are more muchzuk than the other one in the stones. V'iba yisema, or if you want to say that the avanim are munach in the reshus of somebody, and therefore technically you would think hamotzi mechaveru levraya, that person is muchzuk. Shutafim b'chayagavna l'kapti adadi. But when you have shutafim, where one guy owns a bias, one guy owns an aliyah, so they always allow each other to keep their objects in the other one's rishos, and therefore the balar rishos is not muchzuk in the avanim any more than the other guy. Meaning, why is it that when something is in my property, I'm considered to be muchzuk in the item that's in my property? Because why would your stuff be in my property? My stuff would be in my property, so it's more mistaver that it's mine. But if one of us owns a bias, another one owns an aliyah, so we both have equal access and equal usage of the joint space, that does not give a person a sense of chazaka, right? A greater sense of chazaka. It means that you probably have to make an Erev Chatzeros because it doesn't give a person a sense of chazaka. Someone just asked me yesterday, very interesting case. He said he lives in one floor of a building, someone buys Valia, Mamish. He says it's a Bais Valia situation, but in the basement there's a joint laundry room that they both use. One room that they both use. Do we need an Erev Chatzeros? Pashtos, I think so, right? I mean, if you have a joint area that they both use. Now, if someone leaves detergent in the laundry room, the other one can't say, well, it's in my possession. It's in my laundry room, so I'm looking in it. No, because they both leave it there, because they both have permission, even if one of them is the real owner. But if that's the deal, that there's only one laundry room, so we both use it, so I we're not makbid on each other, so that no one could claim possession based on something being left there. Okay, then we said in Mishnah, if someone recognizes some of those stones to be his own, then he's allowed to take them. So v'alla matoin, what's the other guy's taina? Meaning, idakamer in, if the other guy says, yeah, those are your kids' heights marked off on the stones, those aren't my kids. Yeah, I get that. So then, of course, pshita, of course he's allowed to take the stones. What's the Mishnah telling me? If you see that it belongs to one guy. One guy had weird colored paint on his walls. Everyone knew, this is the guy with the pink walls in his house. And the other guy, so you see, everyone knows. V'lo amar in, and if the other guy doesn't say in, and he doesn't agree, so lamanoto, why should one guy say that, oh yeah, those are mine, because I recognize them as mine? Why should he be believed against the other guy? Elada amarle, must be that the second guy's taina is Eniodeya. So the first guy is coming with the Tainas Bari. I know that these are mine. And the other one says, could be, but I don't know how you know. I don't know. So Le Matave Tiyufta Drav Nachman. So wait, maybe our Mishnah, therefore, turns out to be a Tiyufta against Rav Nachman, to Itmar, because if someone has a Taina, that Mana Libi Yadcha, you owe me $100, Va'lo Omer Eniodeya. And the other guy says back, I don't know. Maybe I do, maybe I don't. Rav Huna Rav Yudah Michayim. Rav Huna Rav Yudah say that he has to pay because Bari Vishema, Bari Adif, that he's coming with the Titus Bari, that he knows exactly what he's asking for, and the Titus Shema is not as strong. So therefore, if he says $100, $100, but Rav Nachman, Rav Yochanan, Amri Potter, Rav Nachman, Rav Yochanan say no, Hamotzi Mechaver Lav Araya, and Titus Bari is not a Raya just because you say you're sure of yourself. It's not a raya. Now, the Rashi points out the nitva is still going to have to take a shavua that he's enu yodea, meaning he can't take a shavua that he doesn't know the money because he doesn't know that he doesn't know the money, but at least he has to take a shavua that he's enu yodea, but then once he does that, you're going to have to bring a raya that he owes you the money. Now, if our Mishnah means to say that the Tovea is coming with the Tainas Bari, that these stones definitely belong to me, and the nitva is coming and saying enu yodea, and the Mishnah paskins that the Tovea gets to take the stones that he knows belongs to him, it's a kasha on Rav Nachman, because Rav Nachman says we do not say Bari Vishema Bari Adiv. So Tosos asks a kasha over here in Dibra Maskalema. He says the svara of Rav Nachman is a motzimicha v'ra'ya. Over here we're talking about where the stones are in a rishus rabim or in a rishus shel shneihem, that's jointly owned. We just said that in the Gemara. So no one is muksak. How can you compare this to Rav Nachman's case? I mean, the reason Rav Nachman says I don't follow the guy with the Tainas Bari is because the guy with the Tainas Shema is muchsuk in the money, and it's a motzi mechaver la varaya. In our case of the stones, there is no muchsuk, a very strong kasha, so no one is more muchsuk than anyone else. Even Rav Nachman is going to be moder. If the only thing you have to go on is the Tainas Bari, then you go on the Tainas Bari. If there's nothing else on the other side, there's no competing factor. So Tosa suggests that since everyone knows that each one is entitled to half of the stones, each one is considered to be muhsak in half of the stones. So you can't taina that these are your stones without a raya. Meaning he is considered to be muhsak in any given stone. So you're not able to taina that half of the stones are yours. It's considered as if the other guy is muhsak in them. A little bit difficult, but that's how Tosos answers. So anyway, so the Gemara is asking that it seems that if our Mishnah in fact is talking about a case of a Bari Vishema, our Mishnah goes against Rav Nachman, because it seems that we follow the Tainas Bari in our Mishnah, and Rav Nachman does not follow of the Tainus Bari. So answers the Gemara, Kedam Rav Nachman. This kasha is similar to what we asked Rav Nachman somewhere else, and over there we answered Kegon Sheish Esek Shvua Beinehem, that it's talking about a case where there's already an Esek Shvua Beinehem. So Achanami Kegon Sheish Esek Shvua Beinehem. What does that mean? Heichidami Esek Shvua. What kind of Esek Shvua is already Beinehem? Kid the Rava, like Rava taught us. Dama Rava, Manali Biyadcha. If a guy says you owe me $100, Valo Mer Inuch Biyadi Ela Chamishin, Vashar En Yodea. So right away he's Modav Mixas. I owe you $50. For sure I owe you $50. The other $50 I don't know. So he's Chayv Shvus Modav Mixas that he doesn't owe more than $50. Problem is he cannot take that Shvus Modav Mixas because he can't swear that he doesn't owe more than $50. He's admitting that he might owe more than $50. He doesn't know. So Mitok Shein Yochli Shavi Yeshalim. Since he can't take that Shvua, he's going to have to pay. Because anyone who's Chayv Shvua in order to pat himself from a Chiv Mamun is not able to take that Shvua, just has to pay the money. So here also, we could say that our Mishnah is talking about a case where the second guy is Moda to the first guy that some of the stones that he's claiming are in fact his, but the others, he says, I don't know if all of those that you're claiming are actually yours. So he's Chayv Shvua Smodim Mixas. He cannot take the Shvua Smodim Mixas. So Mimel Chayv L'Shalim. So the other guy is going to be entitled to those stones. And that must be the case in our Mishnah, and that's why our Mishnah is not necessarily against Rav Nachman. Now we had said in the Mishnah that if someone recognizes some of his stones, he takes those, and then va'olos lo min ha-cheshbon. Then we put that into the accounting of the cheshbon of who gets what. So savar Rav Lameima, Rav thought to say that someone who takes keneged the avanim lefi cheshbon shvuros, meaning the first guy takes the avanim hashlemos that he claims are his, and the other one takes an equal number of broken stones, and then everything else they split evenly. So alma kivin damar in yodeya reyat. It sounds from Rava that since he says Ein Yodea, it weakens his Taina, and that's why he's stuck with broken stones connected all the shlemos that the other guy took. So Amle Abai says, Adraba, the Svar is the opposite. Harei Tfei, that the Rishon has a worse Taina. Midahani Yoda, Tfei Lo Yoda, from the fact that he only recognizes these stones and he doesn't recognize any of the rest of that he probably doesn't have any other shlemos, meaning if this guy is recognizing all of his shlemos and he says, yeah, these shalim stones are mine, probably he recognized all of his shlemos and he should have to take all the other broken ones. Vidach kuladeichnenu, all the other shlemos, we should say automatically belong to the other fellow. So Ella Amar Abaye, so Abaye says, no, when we say lefi cheshbon, it means lefi cheshbon shlemos. That if the first guy says that, let's say, these three stones are mine, so the other guy will take three other intact full stones, and then the rest they're going to split evenly, because he gets as many full stones as the original guy gets. Well, if that's the case, what benefit did it have to the first guy to claim these are mine? If anyway, it's going to, the other guy's going to get however many whole stones you claim, the other guy's going to get just as many whole stones. So Gemara says, "Lemalbina Ravcha," if his stones are very wide, wider than the other guy's stones. Inami tina dma abda, or it could be that the first guy benefits if it's more they're more sturdy. They're built in a stronger way, and therefore he wants the taina that those stones belong to him. Okay, Bez Hashem. Tomorrow, Elisha will pick up with the Mishnah on the Baruch Vam Beis. I will Bez Hashem plan on giving Dav Yom Yishir at some point from Camp Kaylee. Stay tuned to the chat. We're going to bother Avi during Shavuot Brachos to run the chat to and Mazel Tov to Avi Kant, our Gabbai Hachat, on his daughter's wedding today. Okay, everyone have a great day.